Welcome to the third edition of John and Paul.
I'm John.
And I'm Paul. And if you're looking for the John and Paul show, you're in the wrong spot because this is
John and Paul. We're going to talk about local and national sports, mainly football, basketball, and baseball, and even throwing a little bit of entertainment.
Trades, trades, trades. No one is safe in baseball. Is Dombrowski making mistakes, or is he a genius? Are the Lions the best team of all time? Probably, but we'll get to that. Shitty Netflix reviews makes its triumphant comeback, retooled, and better than ever before.
So stay tuned and get ready for a fun podcast.
Welcome to John and Paul. Thank you, everyone out there who is listening to us right now. I am Paul, and I would just like to thank Michigan Prep the Pros for having us here, and we're just going to get right into this. So we're going to be talking a little bit about baseball. The winter meetings happened. A lot of things are going on right now. This is a great time for baseball, you know, nuts like us. Fanatics, I should say. But the big domino to fall, who is going to be the first free agent to fall? Aroldis Chapman. Aroldis Chapman signed a 5-year, $86 million contract with the New York Yankees. That's huge for them.
Back in the pinstripes.
They got their closer back. So, John, the big domino fell. Can you tell us a little bit about
that? Yeah, I mean, if you watch SportsCenter or any kind of sports outlet this past baseball season, you saw Aroldis Chapman. This guy can throw 105 miles an hour. I mean, you can find videos and anything about this guy. He's like an urban legend, but he actually exists. There's not very many people in human history that can throw 105 miles an hour. So
consistently.
Yeah, so you knew that he was going to make a big splash in free agency, but no one really knew who he was going to go to. And in these past couple of years, the Yankees have kind of went away from that. You know, they had a tendency to sign...
A lot of guys over 30?
Yeah, exactly. Guys over 30 and guys who it seemed like their best years were behind them. But look at this. They're back at it. So Chapman, I believe he's 29 years old. I can find that stat real quick. But I'm pretty sure he's 29, so... In baseball, when you've got a firearm, you know, like you're depending on your fastball, your athleticism goes down really fast. And you're, you know, everything about what makes you a good player kind of goes down.
Yeah, because, I mean, he's got that really sharp slider. But if his fastball starts to go, that slider is going to be a lot easier to hit. That changeup or whatever pitch is going to be a lot easier to hit. You know, last year he was 4-1. Mm-hmm. With a 1.5 ERA, he had 30 saves in 59 games. I mean,
great year.
I mean, yeah. I'd like to see those saves a little bit more, but telling with those 59 games, it looked like they used him in non-save situations, which baseball is kind of going towards more nowadays.
Yeah, and on the Yankees too. I mean, they had Dylan Becentis. I want to say I'm saying that correct. I'm pretty sure I am, but they had him. They had Andrew Miller and Chapman. So that's like one of the best bullpens of all time.
Yeah, they're calling it the three-headed monster bullpen.
Yeah, it was insane. So to get a save in that kind of, you know, that kind of situation, it's tough because you have so many, you have like borderline starters in your bullpen. So you kind of have to, you know, I can't really say that he could have had more saves because maybe the situations didn't involve that. So
yeah, because you mentioned the whole starter thing. Look at what the Indians used with Andrew Miller. They were I think it was a World Series game or playoff game. They brought him in like the fourth inning and they pitched him until about the eighth. Like
I know you don't see baseball like that, but
no.
Apparently that's what the two best teams in the league did this year.
And I, you know, just going quick to the Tigers. That's what I don't like about Ausmus. He'll do his seventh inning guy, his eighth inning guy, ninth inning guy. Like, if you know that their four best hitters are coming up the next inning, go to your closer in the eighth inning instead of the ninth inning.
Yeah. Well, you know how baseball is. It's a game of rituals, and they're not breaking any rituals.
Right. But so going back to, you know, Chapman, he was on the Cubs, the World Series Cubs. The Cubs acted quickly on this news that Aroldis Chapman signed this huge deal. They traded for one of the world's best closers in the Kansas City Royals with Wade Davis, phenomenal pitcher.
Yeah, I mean, like we were talking about earlier, we have to face the Kansas City Royals so many times because they're in our division. So we experience the Wade Davis saga. Like, this guy, he's had his ups and downs, but he's had a lot of ups, and especially in these past couple of years. I mean, he has such a repertoire of pitches, so many different kinds of pitches that...
Because he used to be a starter.
Yeah, so he's got like five pitches, and they're all really good. It's not like Chapman. We were just saying he's got a fastball, he's got a slider. Joel Zamaya, he had a fastball, he had a curveball.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to be a one-trick pony as a pitcher, especially as you start to get older. But Davis actually has many pitches. He does. He's not going to have to rely on a 99-mile-an-hour fastball.
Because we were looking at his stats earlier, and as a starter, not that very well. Maybe 29 starts, 4 ERA. But let's look at the last 3 years when he was closing for the Kansas City Royals. The past 3 years, he was 19-4. He wasn't a primary closer, but he was their main, bullpen guy. 19-4, he had an ERA of year one, 0.94, which is that's rarely happens. This year wasn't that good, but still great. 1.87 in 185 games. That's
incredible.
That's dominant.
I mean, 1.87. I know you said that's not the best, but I mean, you're not going to find a lot of relievers, especially as a Tigers fan. You know how it is. It's very hard to find that kind of production.
Yeah, exactly. So let's talk about the other side of this trade, because it's rare when a trade actually works out for both teams, and we both agree on this, that this trade worked out for both teams. The Kansas City Royals, they got a 24-year-old Cuban player who's been playing for the Cubs for the few years. Mm-hmm. Last few years.
Yeah, Jorge Salar. He's a 24-year-old Cuban, right-handed batter. 6'4", 210. So, I mean, this guy could be playing safety in the NFL. He's a huge dude.
Yeah, that's huge for baseball.
It really is. And, I mean, I guess it shows in his power numbers, because in his career in the MLB thus far, he's at 27 homers and 98 RBIs. So,
and that's in about, because I think about maybe 500-600 at-bats combined, because you said he was platooning. Because
mm-hmm.
last year I think he had about 400 at-bats, this year about 250. You combine that to a full season, that's great numbers.
It really is, yeah.
For a 24-year-old?
Yeah, 24-year-old. So, and I feel like it fits both teams exactly what they needed. The Cubs, I mean, you always need pitching. You always need bullpen pitching. So getting Wade Davis is a huge plus for them.
Because they didn't want to pay that money to Chapman.
Yeah. And the Royals are kind of in the same boat. They don't want to pay all this money to Wade Davis when his contract expires, and they're gonna, he's gonna be a highly touted free agent. So
the Royals, win-win.
Yeah, the Royals are kind of always looking to rebuild too. This past World Series that they won a couple of years ago, their whole team was farmed. They built their whole team from the ground up. They didn't trade for players.
Yeah, so why not get another 24-year-old young player who's still under contract? He signed a couple years ago a 9-year, $30 million deal, so the Royals have him locked up for a long time, so they can do whatever they want with him.
Yeah, I think they signed him straight out of Cuba when he was 17 years old, and they were already paying him $1 million a year. So this guy, I mean, it's looking up for this guy, so I really hope it works out for both of them. I know the Royals are in our division, but
it's nice to see Wade Davis leave.
It really is. It really is. So I'm excited to see the Tigers versus Jorge Salar guy for the next probably 10 years.
So the next big domino to fall is by someone who likes to make a lot of noise in the offseason, the free agent market, the trade deadline. Whenever he can, he's usually in the news, because we've dealt with him for like the last, 8-9 years, and Mr. Dave Dombrowski. And he ended up trading for Chris Sale over to the Boston Red Sox. Now they have Chris Sale, David Price, Rick Porcello. I'm pretty sure they've all won Cy Youngs, right? Maybe not Chris Sale, but the other two definitely won.
I guess I could look up real quick right now. This past year he finished fifth in the Cy Young in American League. Year before that, fourth. Year before that, third, fifth, and sixth. So, I mean, he's always a lock for
the
top five.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, even this past year he was in the MVP vote. He finished 16th, but still, he's obviously a very talented player.
So, like, bringing back to Dave Dombrowski, we're both very familiar. We've talked about this many times. We loved having a general manager that would just go out and make a move. Like, it was always so interesting. It was always, oh, trade this guy, we get this guy. Oh, trade these prospects, we got Miguel Cabrera. Oh, trade this guy, we have Anibal Sanchez and Omar Infante.
Yeah.
Me and you love that about him. And it's showing exactly, he's doing the same exact thing over in Boston. He's creating this three-headed monster pitching staff, exactly what in Detroit with Scherzer, Verlander, and Anibal Sanchez. It comes down to the point, is he smart for doing this, or is he a little, crazy? Because, I mean, he never won with us. I know he got there, but
While you were saying that, I was just thinking about the impact that trading players has on fans, because when Dombrowski, he's a wheeler dealer. He's willing to trade people.
Just stealing, wheeling, dealing.
Yeah, he's willing to trade anybody at any time. But then that kind of puts people on an island. For instance, Brandon Inge. He was an all-star for us. He was a good player for us. Had a down year, but he was our ninth hitter. And then all the fans are blaming why we're losing because of Brandon Inge.
Yeah, I never got that.
And then a couple years later, same thing. Ryan Rayburn, he's batting ninth for us. He's had a couple good years for us. Oh, he's having a bad year. Why don't we throw his ass to the curb? Because that's what Dombrowski does. So it kind of puts into your mind, like, I understand the one side of it that, yeah, it's nice to keep your, you know, your options open, trade people at will. But on the same hand, it has the potential to throw people under the bus.
It really does. So now you got to think, let's kind of go back to Chris Sale here. He's had some history against the Tigers. It's nice seeing him out of the division, even though we kind of beat up on him. I understand that he had, you know, some incidences while he was with Chicago, made him kind of seem like a prima donna type player.
Yeah, the two big ones were, number one was the jersey ripping this past season. The White Sox were going to be wearing their throwbacks from like 1970 something, and they're these really ugly, like brown and white and orange, like really weird looking jerseys. And apparently Chris Sale was complaining about the arms because they were so tight, and he was starting that night. And basically he went to the GM and the coach and said, I'm not going to be pitching in this because it constricts my arms and it doesn't feel right, like I can't pitch like this. So
I mean, I can kind of get that, but cutting it up, maybe.
Yeah, then
there's got to be some other way around that.
Yeah,
right?
That's like the climax of it, was that he went to the trainer, grabbed scissors, stole scissors from the trainer, and then went and cut all of his jerseys and then his teammates' jerseys.
Yeah, I don't know about all that.
Is that what you want to see from, like, could you imagine Ben Wallace doing something like that, or like Stafford doing something? Could you know what I mean?
Yeah, it actually kind of shows, like, he's your star player, and yeah. You make a good point. Like, it's like, well, can anybody else do that? Just barge in somewhere and be like, I'm the star player, I'm going to do what I want. You know, like, I'm grabbing scissors, I'm cutting the jerseys, yeah. I'm cutting your jerseys.
I mean, maybe he was doing it as a way to get out of Chicago because
he didn't like it there. They're not good.
Yeah, Chicago's had a couple bad years.
It's safe to say, they're not good.
They're not, but I mean, it's still kind of a dick move to go out of your way and cut these jerseys. It's like, you're that big of a baby? But that kind of leads into my second point is, 2 years ago when the Tigers were playing the White Sox in a divisional matchup, basically, Sale was having a really bad game, and we like hit a couple home runs off him. We were playing really well. Everyone was getting a hit off of him. And it got to the point where after the game, he complained and said that the Tigers were sitting in the outfield, the people in the bullpen, with binoculars, and we were stealing the catcher's signs.
Yeah, I remember that. Victor was doing it. It started to trend with the Tigers. It carried over to this year.
And then we had that celebration where everyone was going like this.
Every time they do it now, it's with the goggles. Yeah. But kind of going back to Dombrowski again.
Yeah, let's get back on track. We went a little far off.
We
track.
Did.
We got to talk about Chris Sale. We got to talk trash.
Dombrowski, he is known for wheeling and dealing with these prospects. And we all know what happened in Detroit here. The Tigers are in this rebuild mode now, even though we can't rebuild because we're prospects. From what I'm looking at, you know, on the sheet here, is that he gave up four very talented prospects in their organization. Mm-hmm. One was actually their number one rated prospect, and actually last year he was the number three overall prospect in baseball. So the White Sox winning this deal, but is he just going to deplete the farm system? And if they don't win, how is, you know, is Dombrowski making the same mistakes he did with the Tigers while treating minor leaguers prospects equal instant success, is what I'm trying to get at.
Well, you got to look at it this way. Boston, who do you think is closer to a World Series, Boston at this point or the Tigers?
Boston, by far.
So
they're the Tigers of 2012.
Yeah, so on paper, how can you hate on that? I understand that it's all about building your farm system, whatever, but what's the career length on a GM? Maybe like five years.
But if you're Dave Dombrowski, it's a little different, I feel like.
That's true, but it's all about win now. It's not about build for the future, because if you're building for the future, you're building for somebody else's job.
Right.
As we saw with the 76ers GM this past year.
Yeah, finally.
You know, if you're willing to, well, I'm sure that Dombrowski knows how to trade for the right prospects, but you gotta go for the win when you can.
And that's what they brought him in for, is the win. And you know, speaking of Dombrowski and his replacement, Avila, however you want to say it, he went into the offseason, you know, dishing out Cameron Mabin. He was saying he wants to trade almost everyone, get under the salary cap, make this team younger, and now reports are coming out that they don't want to do that now.
Yeah,
because they went to the winter meetings and apparently they're asking way too much for all their players. I mean, you can't blame them for that. That's not like they're giving away like nothing. They're giving away JD Martinez or Ian Kinsler. These are good players. Mm-hmm. And I can understand why they want this big haul in return, but now they're saying they don't want to give up prospects. Now it's just like, I kind of don't know where this organization is heading right now, because I want them to keep everyone. We're only a few games out of making the playoffs.
True.
I think if we just retool, get a couple people, Zimmerman comes back, I think this Tigers team could be really good.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know what happened there, because maybe he was trying to go for the gamble and just kind of say that everyone's for sale and, like we were just talking about, build his future. But then in the same breath, it's kind of like, maybe he saw what he can get in return. He's like, holy, maybe.
Right, like with the Chris Sale deal or something?
Yeah, yeah, maybe he wanted something like that for, I don't know, Verlander.
JD, yeah, Verlander.
JD, whoever it was. But once he saw what we were going to be getting back, he's like, whoa, maybe we should just go for it all.
Yeah, like, because he probably only has a short window. Obviously, Mr. Ilitch only has a short window, because this team isn't going to be his for much longer. I feel like his kids are going to eventually step up and take over. And you can already kind of see the new kid regime in there with, like, you know, them cutting of the payroll, all this talk. But it's like, and you make a good point, like, all these guys are a little bit older. So, like you said, maybe they're not getting back as much as they thought. Because Chris Sale's younger. Verlander's 33, 34. Yeah. You know, Ian Kinsler's 35, 36. These guys are a little bit older, so you might not get the big haul that you're going to get.
Yeah, and I think that's one mistake that the Tigers have made many, many times. And there's been, throughout any sports organization, a lot of teams have made this mistake. You have to sell it. You have to sell when your people are at their best. You don't wait until they're 4 years past their prime.
Like right now would be a great time to trade Kinsler, because he won that Gold Glove.
Gold Glove, yeah.
Great time to trade.
He almost batted 300 this year. Like, he had a great year. So, yeah, it would be a good time to sell him. But once you get to the reality of actually selling the person or trading the person, it gets, you know, how can you trade Miguel Cabrera after his Triple Crown year?
Never.
You know, exactly.
That locked him in as a Tiger for forever.
It really did. But how can, you know what I'm saying? How could you trade him after that?
You can't.
So it's just the respect that these players get. I understand where they're coming from, but at the end of the day, it's got to be business decisions, and you have to sell when you can get profit. And we saw that with Carlos Guillen, and we saw that with Maglio Ordóñez. We're paying these guys millions and millions of dollars.
And they're hurt, or they're old, and they can't do anything.
Yeah, or they're retired. They're 3 years retired, and we're still paying.
Yeah, I don't want that with Verlander or a Miggy or Victor Martinez just cashes in this year.
And we were talking, I think it was on, I don't know if we had that information at the last podcast, but Kate Upton and Justin bought a house in L.A.,
Yeah, Justin Upton, right?
No, Verlander.
No, it said Justin Upton bought a house out there, too, also.
Did he really?
Yep.
Oh, I didn't hear about that. Well, I mean, whatever. See you later, Upton.
Right, bye. But there's always bye, but then there's a hello. The Tigers selected left-handed pitcher Daniel Stump in the Rule 5 draft. We got him from Kansas City last year in four minor league teams. Overall, his ERA is a 3.34. In four minor league teams. A part of picking him, he has to be on our roster no matter what next year. Or what was it with the, what do the Tigers have to do if they don't keep him on the roster? They have to give him.
It says we have to offer him back to Kansas City. So I don't know if he just becomes a free agent and automatically has first dibs goes to Kansas City. Or
like a waiver wire type thing?
Yeah, I'm not sure entirely how that works, but from what I understand, they still have his rights if we don't keep him on the roster.
Right, and also one more quick note, the Tigers Fest is January 21st. Me and John were talking about going to that. I think that'd be sweet to go to, maybe meet some Tigers, see what's going on, maybe hear from some key important people. It'd always be fun to do. But we're going to switch over to a little bit of basketball talk here. The Pistons talk, a little bit of return of Reggie Jackson. Reggie Jackson returned this past Sunday against the Magic, and we ended up losing that game 6-0. And Reggie Jackson, since his return, we're 1-2. He's averaging 12 points a game, 4 assists, and about 22 minutes a game. You know, it's nice to see him back, but it's going to take him a little bit of time to get back into form.
Yeah, and Reggie, he's never been the best shooter. I mean, throughout his whole career, I'm trying to pull up his field goal percentage. Okay,
he's really good around the rim, but everywhere else, he's questionable.
Yeah, his highest field goal percentage, from what I'm seeing, is 43%. So that's not too good, especially from a guard. I mean,
he has the ball most of the time, and he's a scoring point guard. It's not like he's like a Ricky Rubio where he's looking to pass first. He wants to get a bucket.
Yeah, but he's been kind of trigger happy since he came back. You know, I don't know if he's trying to get his shooting motion back, but he's actually been 5-for-12 from three this year.
Really?
It was just that one game he went 2-for-8 that kind of skewed his numbers. So.
Last game right against the Bulls, right?
Yeah, against the Bulls. No, that was against
Charlotte, right?
Charlotte.
Well, you know, just a quick note, the Pistons also beat the Bulls by 11 the other day, and the Pistons lost to Charlotte actually last night. It was not a very pretty game.
It wasn't.
It was like, what, 87-77, 87-76, something yeah. relatively very low. And we did not shoot that very well. The Pistons were 4-for-27 from behind the three-point line, with Jackson, like we said, going 2-for-8, and Tobias going 0-for-8. Tobias isn't his numbers are up in the three-point category, but not enough to shoot 8 threes. What is he, Stephen Curry?
Yeah, he's not known for his three-pointers. He's more of like a mid-range jumper.
Yeah,
you know?
Slasher.
Yeah, he's more of that kind of player. So I guess maybe he was getting those looks because he has been making them. He's been hitting them at a pretty solid rate this year compared to the past. So.
I think he's around 43%. I actually kind of was, because he's on my fantasy team, so I've been paying attention to him a little bit more than there are some Pistons. But, yeah, he's shooting a little bit better, but I don't like that 0-for-8 stat right there. Was he just going to keep jacking him up at that point?
I guess so. I'm looking at, it says he's shooting 34% from three this year.
Oh, what was that again?
34.
34%, yeah, that's not too good.
That's pretty rough, but I mean, that's not what you're asking him to do. You know, and the thing about the Pistons' offense is it gets really stagnant really fast. You know, when we had Ish playing, there were some decent possessions. You know, they were working on the pick and roll with Drummond. But if KCP's not hot, if Marcus Morris isn't hot, if Tobias Harris,
yeah,
then we're pretty much screwed because none of those guys can hit consistent jumping three, like stand up shot threes.
Right.
So it gets to the point where our offense gets really stagnant, and that's what happened yesterday. And I know that
they're trying to work Reggie back in.
Yeah, and Charlotte, they really do. They have a lot of defensive stoppers. Kemba, decent at defense. They got Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, who they drafted because of defense. Nick Batum, he's one of the best perimeter defenders in the league. Roy Hibbert, he's 7'10" and like 500 pounds. So even if he's not very good at defense,
don't forget Zeller, man. He's a white boy. He's gonna hustle. He's gonna play some defense. It's, you know, he's not out there for his offense. He's out there to play defense and get rebounds.
Yeah, but Hibbert, I mean, he can basically stand in the paint. He's a giant stump. So their defense isn't horrible. I mean, they're good. I don't even want to say they're horrible. They're really good. And the Pistons have a really good defense too. So it was like a defensive showdown. And
it
was a boring game to watch because of that.
But someone did have a really good game last night. Our franchise, Mr. Drummond. He had a great game. 26-20. That was basically the only high point of our game. I was watching the highlights. He really had his hook game going last night, and I can see the development over the past few years of that hook game. I know it's not where it needs to be, but last night was a really good sign. When our offense isn't going well, they can just give him the ball down low, and like you said, over a Hibbert or a Zeller. He was giving them those little baby hooks. He would back them down. I've noticed with Drummond, when he catches it super close to the rim, that's when he's more effective with his hook shot. Sometimes I'll see him catch it way outside the paint, try and back it in, because he's not, we watch him, he's not the best ball handler. He's not the best with the ball. I feel like if he gets down to that block and then can just turn and do that little flip hook, he's going to be more successful.
Yeah, it's just a matter of that's the only move he has.
But if you can't stop it.
I know, it's so predictable, though. It's like, it's not like Shaq. Like, Shaq has, like, 10 different moves. Drummond literally has that stupid baby hook, and that's it. So he has to wait until he's going against guys like Roy Hibbert or Zeller, where he can just physically take over him or out-athleticism him. But
I just think once Jackson gets back, sorry to interrupt, I think once Jackson gets back and they really get that pick-and-roll going again, it's going to make Drummond, because Drummond, career numbers last year.
I'm not worried about the pick-and-roll. I'm talking about post moves, because that's what we were talking about. His baby hook, it's not going to cut it. If we want to actually make it, I know in a little bit we're going to be talking about the conference seeds. If we want to make it past the 8 seed, currently we're at the 8 seed. If we want to get past that, Drummond has to step his stuff up. He can't be just an offensive rebounder on offense. He's got to actually, you know what
I
mean?
Yeah, we're paying him like he's got, you know, we're paying him Anthony Davis money.
Exactly.
He's the same size as him, but he can't do any half of the offensive move that he can.
Yeah, and I know
hope we never see Drummond shoot threes, though.
Yeah, Anthony Davis, he's a once-in-a-generation player, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't comparing him to him, but you know what I mean. Like, they're the same size, so, like, Drummond's more your traditional player. But you brought up the Eastern Conference standings. Right now, we're currently in the eighth. How are you feeling about that? What do you think we got to do to, you know, jump some of these other players or teams?
Yeah, so just looking at the breakdown, the Pistons are 8, like I said. We got in front of us, the Knicks are in front of us, Bulls are in front of us, and then behind us at the 9 seed, Pacers. Then 10 seed are the Hawks, who are 11 and 12. But then the biggest thing that I feel like kind of says it all about the Eastern Conference is that the Milwaukee Bucks are 11 and 9, and they have the 5 seed.
And to me, that just shows how weak the East actually is this year. We all know that the West is the dominant conference. And if you're telling me that the fifth seed is only going to be 3 to 4 games over 500, the Pistons won, 44, 43 games last year? That's the fifth seed right now.
Yeah.
So if they can regain that form and, you know, maybe have 6-7 games over 500, we could be the 3-4-5 seed. Because no one's catching Toronto. No one's going to catch Cleveland. That's pretty apparent. But it just shows to me that, you know, the Pistons can make a nice little run here and get higher up if once Jackson and all these players start playing very well together.
Yeah, and while you were saying that, Paul, I looked up the Western Conference playoff standings currently. And, okay, so the fifth seed are the Memphis Grizzlies, and their record is 15-8.
Seven games.
Yeah, so followed by the Thunder, who are 14-8, and followed by the Jazz, who are 14-9.
Wow, well, good for the Jazz.
Yeah.
Good for the Jazz.
How about that? And then finally, the eighth seed are the Trailblazers, who are 12-11. So the Trailblazers would be the seventh seed in the Eastern Conference.
And I feel like that's always a conversation every year. Wow. I know it's a little off topic. Why don't they just open up the whole thing, get rid of divisions, have a fair schedule, everyone plays everyone like twice or something like that, and make it just the best 16 teams make the playoffs, and then you divide it from there.
Yeah, why not?
Because, like, you've seen before, I remember years ago, there was a 50-win team in the West, did not make the playoffs, but a 39-43 team gets the 7th seed over in the East. Like, how is that fair?
And it's just not good basketball at that point because you have, like you said, you got a 39-43 team playing the Spurs, who've lost 15 games a whole season. And who wants that first-round matchup to see? You know,
because it's going to be a 4-0 sweep.
Yeah, maybe they'll win one game. Congratulations, you won the season. You know, it's like a couple of years ago when Brandon Jennings guaranteed that the Milwaukee Bucks would beat LeBron and the Miami Heat.
I was just about to bring that up. Him and Ellis and Bogut. Yeah. Oh, no, they traded Bogut for Ellis, but you know what I mean.
That wasn't happening. So,
and I love Brandon Jennings.
Then one of the few times where an 8 seed beat a 1 seed, it was because Derrick Rose got injured.
Yeah.
And he tore his ACL.
Or the Golden State beat Dallas. That Golden State was...
That was an interesting team.
But they were like a 50-win team. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that proves your point that the better team should get in regardless.
Exactly.
So take the top 16 teams instead of taking... You know,
eight from each side.
Yeah. God. Yeah. I don't know. I think we got to talk to David Stern about that.
Yeah. Or just another whole podcast on it.
next week, spoiler alert.
You know, you mentioned... what was it? OKC, they were, the fifth seed? 14-8?
Yeah.
I think someone who's been frequently talked about...
They were the sixth seed.
They were the sixth seed.
Yeah.
Talked about someone who's very frequently on this show so far is Russell Westbrook.
Oh, yeah.
He has 6 straight triple-doubles now.
Yep.
Officially has one more triple-double than LeBron in his career, despite playing only 5 seasons fewer.
That's incredible. That's an insane stat.
And... the why I said their record to start off with is because you'd think that he's more of like this AI type player right now. You know, he's doing everything, but it's not like they're 4-14. They're 14-8. They're in the playoffs. I'm pretty sure they're winning their division right now. And if he gets them into that 5-6 seed, he's winning the MVP no matter what.
I think I have to agree because, well, then again, Paul, I'll counter that point with a good friend, a dear, very close friend of mine, James Harden. And the Houston Rockets, they're the fourth seed at 15-7.
Yeah, but Westbrook's averaging a triple-double.
Harden's getting pretty close.
I know, but Harden's got better players. I looked up the stats the other day. What's it? Eric Gordon's on Houston, right?
Oh, or is that Bledsoe? Don't bring in the Eric Gordon argument.
No. Ariza, Ryan Anderson, and Bledsoe, they are the 2, 3, and 4 spot right now, and 3-pointers made this season. So at least Houston has a little bit more help around him than Westbrook does. Westbrook has Oladipo, Cantor, and Adams.
Yeah, they're paying Steven Adams $25 million a year.
I know, but he's not a scorer.
But that's what I'm saying. If you're paying a guy $25 million, then he's a superstar.
Right.
So it's hard to argue which team is better, which team is worse, but it's hard. It's really hard to say that James Harden has a good supporting cast because his whole team is all cast-offs.
Right.
You know, Ryan Anderson, he's had a lot of injury issues. Every single year, it seems like he misses 30 games.
That's true.
So when he plays, yeah, he's great. I mean, he's good. Eric Gordon, when he plays, he's good. But
and then Ariza, he's a, you know, NBA champion, so you got to give him credit for that.
That's true.
But, no, I agree with your point. It's going to be a battle for the MVP. It's definitely, I think it's only going to be between those two. Unless Mr. Greek Freak.
Good luck. Good luck. No, you
got
to say it.
You got. Come on.
You
got
to say it. We typed it out. You got to say it.
Giannis Antetokounmpo has seven. I'm sorry, dude. Greek Freak. I'm sorry, but he has seven career triple-doubles. He actually just got one last night, and he is now tied for the third most ever by an NBA player 22 years or younger, and he is on a pretty nice list there, John.
Yeah, how about that? LeBron, 14. Jason Kidd, 11. Giannis has 7, and he's tied with the Kardashians'
One of my favorite players.
Yeah, Lamar Odom. So, I mean, that's a pretty solid. It's kind of random that Lamar Odom's on that list, but
no, Lamar used to be like these guys before these guys.
All right, let's get back to Giannis.
Okay, all right.
I don't want to talk about
Lamar. I love
Lamar,
so you're kind of. But Giannis is a very good player, and
he is.
I wish I had the stats up, but since Jason Kidd made the switch over to him as point guard in the middle of last year, his numbers are insane. He's probably averaging like 17, 8, and 7 with 2 assists and 2 blocks. That's numbers we've never seen before. Getting steals and blocks, plus almost averaging a triple-double. I mean, he's got 7 right now, and he's on pace to probably catch up to Westbrook and
Harden.
LeBron.
Oh, LeBron. Okay. Yeah, he's averaging 22 points a game, 6 assists, and 8.9 rebounds.
What about the steals and the blocks?
Oh, let's see. God, I'm going to have to scroll down for that.
But, you know.
Oh, okay, there it is. He's got 2.5 blocks per game and 2.2 steals per game.
Come on, that's doing everything.
Yeah, that's incredible.
That's playing defense. He's the whole team.
I didn't know he was doing that well. Like, I know he's been having a pretty solid season, but that's something else.
I was reading something that why he isn't up there in the conversation more for the best players, and Jason Kidd was like, well, you can't pronounce his name.
It's true.
It's not marketable.
It's true. You can't. It's just an insane name. What are they going to do, though?
Just call him the Greek Freak. But, I mean, is that going to get offensive to someone nowadays? Oh, you're calling him a freak.
What if he... Oh, it says one of his other nicknames is the Alphabet.
The Alphabet. Yeah, because it's got so many letters in there.
That's a cute name.
I like it. But this guy has the athleticism of like LeBron James and the skill set of him, but he has the size of Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
Yeah, I know.
He can pass, he can shoot, he can steal, he can block, he can defend, he can run the court, they had him at small forward, he can play point guard now. This guy can literally do everything.
Yeah. I just kind of wonder, the biggest question I have about this guy is he like Chris Bosh in Toronto, where he's a really good player in a crappy franchise? Or is he legit?
I think he's legit. I think he's good. I mean, Bosh is legit. Why are you saying Bosh isn't legit?
Bosh is good. I'm just saying that's just one of the questions that people say. Like when Kevin Love was on Minnesota, people were saying, oh, he's getting a double-double, but is that because Minnesota sucks or is it because Kevin Love's good?
Right. And it's like I think sometimes it's scenarios where it's a combination of both. Like you can be on a bad team and be really good.
Yeah. We have to wait until Giannis makes it to the playoffs.
And see what he does there.
Yeah, because that's a whole other stage. And I mean he has Jabari Parker. He was the number 2 overall pick.
Right.
So those two growing together is gonna be real fun to see unless you play against them multiple times a year like the Pistons do.
Yeah, and speaking of going to see him, he comes to town I'm pretty sure the 28th, and I really want to go to that game.
That's kind of like a must-have ticket right now.
I think me and you should go because I was looking at tickets, and they're like $5, $10. And I was also looking up, like, the 7th row, mid-court, $40.
Yeah, let's check out those $5 tickets.
But I want to see this guy up close. I mean, I know the Pistons have that great big screen. That'd be cool to see him up close. I got to see Harden that close, and that was sweet. He just, like we talked about before, he makes the game so smooth. And speaking of someone else who makes the game so smooth is Klay Thompson. Other night, 60 points in 3 quarters, 29 minutes. And I was listening to, I forgot who it was on ESPN. He only took four dribbles, and he only had the ball in his hand for 90 seconds.
Wow. That's, but he had, that's Klay Thompson points. In a nutshell right there.
Oh, I'm in a nutshell. but 21 for 33, 10 of 11 free throws, 8 for 14 3 points. That is just impressive. And another quick note, John Wall, one of my other favorite players, he dropped 52 the other night. These are some of the best stars in the game that this NBA has, and it's just like when they dominate like that,
yeah,
it's really good for, you know, discussion and just to get more people involved. When you have someone dropping 60 and 52 in the same week, really puts the NBA on the map.
Yeah, and real quick, Paul, I'm going to do the most fanboy topic of all time, but this is something that we tried to get into the last couple shows, is who would say no to a Klay Thompson for Andre Drummond trade?
Golden State.
You think?
Yeah.
I don't know. They got all the shooters on the planet, but they don't have a big man who can rebound and play defense.
That's true.
And that's what Drummond... Okay, so you're the Golden State GM, and I'm Stan Van Gundy.
Okay, you go ahead. You're initiating the deal.
Hey, how about that Klay Thompson fella?
Yeah, he's really good. Just dropped 60 points for us the other night.
Yeah, well, this Andre Drummond guy, you know, he's got 20 and 20 games all the time.
Can you shoot free throws?
You have four other guys that can shoot free throws.
So, I don't want to lose one of my best players to get a big...
He's not even your top four best players.
What do you mean?
Okay, he's top...
No. Okay. He's definitely top four.
Yeah, okay, he is the four, though. He's not even your top three player.
Right. I don't know. I can see where you're coming from. I get that Golden State needs this big guy. I don't know what that was our best impersonation of a GM conversation.
Hey, you want to go bowling after this or what?
But I can see your point. Pistons would love Klay Thompson on their team, and I'm sure Golden State would love a big player like Andre Drummond. I'm sure Andre Drummond would love the spotlight out there in Golden State.
Yeah, for sure.
But
just imagine the combination, and it would just be for 1 year. So it would have to be 1 year. Balls to the wall, Reggie Jackson, Klay Thompson, and then KCP at the three.
Yeah.
And then Tobias and Marcus at the four, and then Baines.
Baines and Boban.
The rise of Baines and Boban, yeah.
The rise.
So Baines would be so much cheaper for a long-term option than Drummond. I know this is totally crazy and it probably would never happen, but...
This is 2K talk.
If this is 2K, this is a trade I'm making. I'm getting Klay Thompson because we need a three-point shooter.
We really do, because... What was that stat? 4 for 27? No, that's not gonna win you games. Speaking of, you know, people that have been winning games, are our very own Detroit Lions,
hey.
The kitty cats. Meow. So they extended their win streak to 4 straight games while dismantling the New Orleans Drew Breeses 28-13 to move to 8-4, first place, 2 games up in the NFC North.
Yeah, and real quick, Paul, I have Drew Brees and Stafford on my fantasy team. So every week it's like, Brees,
what do you do?
Brees, Stafford, I don't know. And then I start, you know how fantasy football is.
Yeah.
But this past week, Stafford kind of punched me in the balls or threw a football at my balls. I don't know, whatever works better.
Ball crew in it?
I ended up starting Drew Brees. But what the hell happened this week? I mean, Brees is supposed to get 20 touchdowns against the Lions.
That's what the talk was. That's what everyone said. Even I said it.
Yeah, they're going for 70. The Lions, they don't got a chance against them.
No, it just shows that the Lions' defense has stepped up huge.
It's good. It's like, what the hell?
They're 11th best defense right now. They picked off Breeze 3 times.
Yeah.
I mean, I can read off some more. They stopped his.
Please.
They stopped off his 60-game home streak of throwing a touchdown. That's basically 7.5 seasons.
Yeah.
7.5 football. Some people don't even make it to 3 football seasons. This guy's thrown a touchdown pass in 7.5 straight seasons at home. And the Lions of all teams stopped them.
Yeah.
With interceptions from, Killebrew?
Killebrew got one to end the game.
Glover Quinn got a great interception. He just...
picked it right out, yeah.
Oh.
He ran probably 20 yards across the field.
Brees called all goes.
Yeah. Everyone go deep. If this usually works, do it. Just go deep. I don't know why Brees talks like that, but...
I like it.
Yeah, so, I mean, you remember a couple of years ago, I believe it was 2011 when we made the playoffs and we played the Saints in the first round.
Yeah.
And they just destroyed us. It didn't even look like we were playing the same sport. And Breeze just picked us apart. And we had a, on paper, we had a better defense then than we do now.
Exactly.
And we destroyed Breeze. We made Breeze our, like, we kind of made him our little bitch. I mean, I don't want to talk about Breeze that way, but we kind of did.
But I thought you were going to bring up the London game when he did the same exact thing, but in return, Stafford pulled his mojo. Yeah. And was that the game where he threw it to Theo Riddick in the end zone and we made that comeback? Great win. So, I mean, Breeze has done it to us before.
Yeah. But
we stopped literally the best offense in the NFL right now. MVP discussion for Drew Brees. We stopped him. I mean, we've held opponents to under 20 points for six straight games now. Like I said, the 11th best defense in the league right now. Like, dude, that's what you need.
We've never seen something. I mean, I guess we have technically in the numbers, you know, but when you actually watch them, there's like this weird confidence.
Yeah, the eye test. It's like,
yeah, that's the perfect way to put it. It's like when Stafford gets the ball, he's controlling the ball. He's not going to give it away because of a stupid Stafford throw that he throws, you know.
He does not do that anymore.
He doesn't do it. It's so bizarre. It's like watching, I don't want to say Tom Brady, but it's exactly like watching Tom Brady.
So do you have to give that credit to Caldwell / Jim Bob Cooter for executing the game plan that they want to do a dink and dunk, let Stafford... Yeah.
It could be that, but it could just be Stafford
finally figuring out the game.
Yeah, I think he is, because he's always had the tools since day one. You remember.
But everyone's like, Stafford, Brett Favre, just sling it to Calvin, sling it to Calvin.
Yeah.
Go deep.
But then he actually has figured it out. You know, it's so unbelievable, because when Stafford gets the ball, I'm not worried.
I'm not either. I love it now.
Yeah, and before it was like, oh, God, the offense is there.
If Calvin's not doing anything, the offense is nothing.
Oh, my. I mean, I love Calvin. Like, he's, I don't even know, like he's some Ritz crackers or something.
But it's transcending to this team that he's gone, and now that it's just Stafford's more of a complete player. Like, I was looking at the box score from the other game. There was no one that touched the ball more than 9 times other than Stafford. That is just, I think our lowest had 3, our highest had 9 was Zenner, who played a great game in the second half, 9 carries for 40 yards. He's a big bruiser, but that's just Stafford getting the ball to the right people. I know he has no control. I mean, actually, he does have control. He can check into a run. He can check into a pass.
Yes.
He's really controlling this game. I'm pretty sure they had about 37 minutes of time of possession in that game. That is huge.
Yeah.
That's not giving Breeze any rhythm to get into anything, and then it's keeping your defense on the side too when they have to go out there, step up, and make big plays.
Yeah, and real quick, Paul, this is something we were talking about the other day. So in Stafford's entire career, there's only been one season where he threw for more interceptions than touchdowns, and that was his rookie season in 2009.
Which is acceptable.
Yeah, so let's just erase that. Let's say in all of his seasons thus far, he hasn't had a season aside from his rookie season. So then you look at someone like Brett Favre, who he's constantly compared to. His third season, he had one. His in 1999, he had one. So that's two. Let's see how many other times he did it. Three in 2005. In 2006. 2008. In 2010.
Yeah, and then we were sitting there because we were just looking up stats, and we were like, what other quarterbacks have done this? One of the first came up was Eli Manning. We thought he had so many more. He only had two.
Yeah, so comparing Stafford to a gunslinger like Favre, it's not like that.
No. Brett Favre was like, oh, triple coverage, I got this.
I'm slinging in there.
Yeah. Remember that parody video I showed you where it was like the Brett Favre, you know, the what should I do? Yeah. Remember he was like doing the coaching? He's like, Tommy, it looks so much cooler when you throw it in the triple coverage.
It does, though. It does. And another thing about Brett Favre, I'm going to go out on a limb and talk some shit about Brett Favre because he destroyed us for so many years.
Right.
And he got a lot of points against us. He got a lot of touchdowns against the Lions.
So are you saying his numbers aren't as good because he played the Lions?
I just think they're a little...
A little skewed?
I think they're a little inflated, yeah.
Right.
Because, you know, people, especially Green Bay Packer fans, I got a couple, they all think that Brett Favre is like the second coming of whoever.
Of Breezes.
Yeah. But when it comes down to it, I mean, Aaron Rodgers is pretty solid, too.
Yeah, he's great. It's just nice for that organization to go from Favre to Rodgers like that.
That was lucky.
That was very lucky. And I mean, even Rodgers' first year, they went 6-10, but they threw 28 touchdowns and 13 interceptions. Yeah. That's That's great. But going back.
Yeah, we got to move. We're just breezing through some stuff.
Breeze. But going back to the defense / special teams, A'shaun Robinson, second round draft pick from Alabama, he is tied for the league right now and passes broken up at the line of scrimmage. And we were watching his highlight tape earlier today. This guy's a monster.
Yeah, he is.
He's
strong.
He just bull rushes. He's like
he's a hog, dude.
He's like a smaller version of Sue.
Sometimes when you watch him play, I mean at the college level, like we haven't seen his kind of dominance yet in the pros because obviously there's more, you know, more technical stuff that you need to do. You can't just be a giant.
Technical.
Yeah. You can't just be a beast and just bull rush everybody. But A'shaun,
he was elusive.
Yeah, that's what he was doing. He had some good bull rush moves. He had some good rip moves, some swim moves. Like he could do it all. It was unbelievable.
They were putting him on the edge. They were putting him on the inside. They almost even looked like they were putting him standing up. They were putting him all over the field at Bama. And he just made these guys look like children out there. He is a man.
And now he's so much more like in shape. He just seems like he's lost weight and he's just ready to play in the pros now.
It's nice to have a player like that on your team, a second round pick. When was the last time we had a second round pick that did anything? Tyus Young, no.
Now
No, John.
He was better than Calvin. Remember, according to him.
according to him,
he was the best receiver. Yeah.
Gosh, but it's nice seeing going to Bob Quinn. It's great to see that this guy comes over from the Patriots organization.
Yeah. He deserves some appreciation.
He comes in right away and says, this is what we're going to do. I have a plan. I'm going to get those guys who are gritty, that want to make a paycheck. They're fighting. Like the Seattle Seahawks. They get players that want to, like, they're scrappy. They're going to, like, I think their model is, if you play great for us, we're going to pay you. And if you show it to us every single day, we are going to make sure, we're going to take care of you. We're not going to just give you money just because you're a name or a star or a second round pick. If you suck, you're gone.
For
and like,
sure.
I just kind of want to name off some of the players that he has signed or drafted with us. I mean, you know, he picked up Anquan Boldin, Andre Roberts in the free agency. Taylor Decker, first round draft pick. He's the seventh best rookie right now, according to Pro Football Focus. A'shaun Robinson, second rounder. He was projected to be a first rounder pick. Great player. We got Miles Killebrew, fourth rounder. He had that. You said he had that clinching interception in the last game.
Yep.
He's playing great. When was the last time I feel like this team has depth. And when was the last time the Lions had depth?
That's so true.
Someone gets hurt. Oh, put him in. Oh, he gets hurt. It's nice. It's not like someone's skipping a beat. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's so true. And that was the biggest complaint about the Lions at the start of the season was our defensive line, and you know we have no depth in it. But our defensive line's been pretty solid.
Yeah, look at like Taylor Decker. He's got like 5-6 sacks. You know, A'shaun Robinson. He's not a huge sack guy, but he's disrupting like the rush and getting in the pressure that we had on Breeze the other game was great. It didn't show up in the stat sheet, but
yeah, it was there. And this is all last game. I forgot to mention Whitehead didn't play our starting middle linebacker, and he's a pretty solid middle linebacker.
Yeah, I think he's leading our team in tackles or right up
there.
Yeah,
I believe it. So missing him, and then kind of like the ghost of DeAndre Levy.
I only want to mention him.
Yeah, he's like on the team, but he's also just kind of like the team mascot at this point, kind of.
Right.
So we're definitely hoping he comes back, but I'm not buying it at this point.
And just real quick, going back to Bob Quinn, he says he's going to evaluate talent. That was like his motto. And you know what he does? He comes right in, gives Darius Slay money. Number one in the NFC for cornerback right now, fourth in the league.
Wow.
Giving Theo Reddick money. I know he doesn't get the touches, but I think he almost has about 500 rushing yards.
Oh, Reddick's great. Yeah, Reddick's great.
That's
great
for what we're using him for.
Yeah, he is.
He's such a mismatch. And then you also have like low-key pickups like Raphael Bush and Tavon Wilson. And the return of Joik Bell.
Hey!
Joik.
Yeah, we missed that guy. We needed a big bruiser. Like, Zenner's cool enough.
I like Zenner. We didn't talk about him enough, but
yeah,
he's
Zenner's
good.
Cool. He's a decent running back, but Joik Bell, you need like six guys to tackle him. He's a truck.
And Chicago didn't really use him at all this year. Maybe it's because they didn't get anything left in his tank. They do. My boy Jordan Howard. He's gonna lead me to the fantasy promised land. But
hey, we gotta get into this Netflix discussion.
Real quick, Thursday Night Football.
Oh my. How could I forget?
Thursday Night Football. You got a great matchup tonight. You can't ask for anything better. You got the Oakland Raiders, who are 10-2. against the Kansas City Chiefs, are in 9-3, first and second in their division right now. And the Broncos, can't forget about them because they're two games back of the Raiders, one of the Chiefs. They're third in division, but they're still in the hunt.
Mm-hmm.
This game has serious playoff implications as far as the first round bye goes.
I know those pesky Broncos. You don't want to bet against them, especially, you know, I know they have a lot. They've been having a lot of quarterback trouble this year, but the defense is just so ridiculous. And I just saw something before I came in here. Aqib Talib, he's the number one cornerback this year, and number two is Chris Harris, who's Denver's other cornerback. So,
and then you have Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware just giving up pass rush, and it just makes them better.
Ray, like, they got such an incredible defense that I could see Oakland and Kansas City blowing it and Denver winning their division somehow.
I really like Trevor Siemian. I don't think he gets enough credit. That last game that he played that they lost, he played great. John Elway went and found a steal in the seventh round with this Siemian guy. And
he did.
Looking at Paxton Lynch playing a few times this year, he's no Siemian. It's like, I'm sorry. Simeon's good. I like him. I'm kind of like, lost. Like, I do like Siemian, and he's a really good quarterback. So tune into tonight's game. It could be the best in the history of Thursday night football ever. But we're going to take a quick break right here, and we're going to come back with our shitty Netflix segment of the week.
Ooh. We want you. We are LTU, Lawrence Technological University, and is one of the nation's best schools for engineering, architecture, and technology. We don't want just anybody. We want students who are curious and driven. Students who want to change the world through technology, science, and design. So if you believe that possible is everything, we want you at LTU.
Hey, welcome back to John and Paul. We are going to be going to our shitty Netflix review.
Our favorite segment of the pod.
I like this part. It's a nice little switch up.
Yeah, our first one, I don't know how many people listened to it, but it was, you know, We had a pretty rough time, so we went back to the drawing board. Me and Paul, we like had this whole Rocky montage. We worked out with each other, and
you're
like,
the best.
Yeah, we're like, we gotta break this thing down, dude. We gotta make this as good as possible.
So we picked for our shitty Netflix review, Scary Movie 3.
Great flick.
It's a movie starring Anna Faris, Charlie Sheen, Kevin Hart, Annie Anderson. It was directed by David Zucker, who directed also Airplane, Basketball, Naked Gun 1 through 3, and also some of the other scary movies 3 through 5. So the budget for this movie was a little under $50 million at $48 million, and it ended up doing very well at $220 million. That's a great return on your investment if you were the producer of this movie.
Yeah, these movies, that's what it was all about at the time. You know, when 1 and 2 came out, both of those movies made over $200 million.
So why not make a third?
Yeah, so why not make a third? And then they made $200 on this. They're like, why not make a fourth? They made $200 on that. So we're going to be seeing Scary Movie until the day we die, probably.
So this film parodies a lot of movies. The Ring, Signs, Matrix Reloaded, 8 Mile, Go M&M, The Minority Report, Basketball, Matt and Trey, I love you guys, keep doing your thing, Lord of the Rings, Sixth Sense, the others, Pootie Tang, Airplane, and Air Force One. This movie got a 36% on Rotten Tomato, and John, I know this is a very big fan favorite of yours, so what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, this was one of the first movies I ever got as a DVD, and back then it was like a big deal. You'd go to the mall with your mom would like drive you to the mall and she'd give you $20 and you'd go to FYE and you could buy like one DVD because back then DVDs were $20 a piece.
Yeah.
The bad old days. And I always knew about Scary Movie, so I had to have it. So I got Scary Movie 3. This is in 2003, by the way. So I was 11 years old. So
little 11-year-old Johnny.
Yeah. Luckily, this is the first time that Scary Movie was a PG-13 movie.
So that's probably why your mom was like, okay, you can get this.
Yeah, I guess
rated PG-13.
Yeah, she saw Charlie Sheen. She's like, oh, I like that guy. He seems like a genuine guy.
He was in that baseball movie.
Yeah, he doesn't look like he'll ever have a mental breakdown or anything. So he's definitely the guy I want to influence my son in the future. But no, I mean, I just have a really deep connection with this movie because it's like directly up my alley. You know, it's a lot of stupid jokes, one right after another. And then
that's kind of my humor.
Yeah, and then it also has a bunch of horror movies, which I'm a big fan of horror movies. So what could go wrong in this movie?
I think that's both of our fortes. We both love the cheesy comedy movies, yeah, like the Austin Powers or the, yeah, scary movies. Yeah,
a lot of shtick. Like,
or the, you know, Not My Teen movie, stuff like that. And then we also, me and you are always hunting for the next scary movie. Like, yeah, we'll always be like texting each other, hey, dude, you see that commercial for that movie? Like, oh my God, yeah, dude, we gotta see that. You know, like, we're always looking for scary and comedy. If you can combine the two, dude, what a perfect match.
Yeah, and this movie pretty much starts, I know a lot of people out there saw The Ring, the horror movie from the mid-2000s. It basically starts exactly like that with Pam Anderson and Jenny McCarthy?
Yeah.
McCartney? I don't know. Whatever. But, so basically... She's not important to this Netflix review, so just ignore her name. So, basically, it starts off just like The Ring. It's two girls. They watch a movie, and then it kills you in 7 days. So, it goes from there, and it continues into the movie Signs, which was directed by M. Night Shyamalan and stars Mel Gibson. And then basically Charlie Sheen is playing the role of Mel Gibson in that movie. And it just turns into this ridiculous parody where every single thing that happens is more ridiculous than the last.
And when you add a cast of Anna Faris and Charlie Sheen and Kevin, yeah, Hart, you're going to get a lot of ridiculous all of a sudden. Like, the one scene I thought was so ridiculous is because Anna Faris is a news reporter and she's trying to get out, oh my gosh, there's aliens, oh my gosh, there's, yeah, a killer videotape. And they're like, no one's going to take you seriously because you're a girl. And she's like, what's so important about these boobs? And she like rips open her shirt and it's like these fakest boobs. And then literally every guy in the office runs up and is looking at her boobs and they're just jiggling like boom, boom, boom. Then she covers them up and all the guys are like, ah! And they're like, she's like, what's so important about these?
And then right after that, another kind of like throwback thing is, they're talking about, they're like naming like and then the boss of the organization is like, and twins! Like those crappy Budweiser commercials,
right?
Like 10 years ago. But yeah, that part still cracks me up.
You know, Charlie Sheen, he basically plays himself in this movie, and he goes down as one of the parody actors because he can make fun of himself. He's been in multiple scary movies. He's really good at just, you know, it's nice to see when someone can laugh at, yeah, himself and not, yeah, just...
Charlie Sheen has a lot of... I don't want to say good, but he's got a lot of movies like that where you wouldn't watch it unless it was Charlie Sheen as the main guy. You know, if you replaced him with somebody else, I don't know who, but Charlie Sheen just plays the role so well, and he seems like a genuine person. For as crazy as that is, he seems like Charlie Sheen is Charlie Sheen. He's not bullshitting who he is.
Yeah, he's going to be upfront about it. He's like, I'm Charlie Sheen. I do this. I don't really care. Like,
yeah,
I'm just Charlie Sheen.
Yeah, you got to respect him for that.
You really do. And it's not like, you know, doing these scary movies now, like, it's a parody movie. Mm-hmm. You could say they're supposed to be funny. Like, I hate when people are just like, oh, you're selling out because you're doing these type of movies. It's like, no, like, yeah, they like comedy. They think it's a good idea. Like, they've clearly been successful, like, reading, mm-hmm, off the numbers that we've talked about. So it's like, why not get involved in the scary movie franchise?
Yeah, and one thing, Paul, I wanted to bring up was about how this movie, I believe we said it was, 36% of Rotten Tomatoes. Let me just tell you what the score was on Scary Movie 2.
Oh.
Because I think we might have jumped the gun on picking this movie. You know, I was really excited because I knew this movie had a bad review. But then I saw Scary Movie 2, and that has the ever-elusive...
ever-elusive.
It has 15% on 109 reviews. That's a smack in the face to Scary Movie.
That is.
Like, I understand these aren't like...
They're not supposed to be like the, yeah, super
it's
powerhouse
movie. It's
like
the movie. Shawshank Redemption, yeah, or something. It's just like, it's a shitty,
take it for
funny
what it's
movie.
Worth.
Yeah. So...
Like, that's the problem. Everyone in these movie critiques take it so seriously. Yeah. Oh my God, that was such bad acting, such a bad cast. Yeah. The flow of the movie was so bad. What do you expect? It's a scary
it
movie.
Is what
it's
is.
A parody movie.
Yeah, and if you've seen Airplane or if you've seen Naked Gun...
Or Austin Powers.
Yeah, it's... All those movies are just one-liner after one-liner, so...
And that's what we want.
Yeah, and Scary Movie, that's what it is. And eventually it turned into that horrible thing where there were so many movies like Vampire Suck or like Hero Movie or...
Right.
You remember that? There was all those really bad movies.
Yeah, Non-Other Teen Movie, all those ones.
Yeah, so I feel like that kind of got lumped in with those movies.
And you gotta appreciate the good ones like the Austin Powers or Airplane or the Scary Movies.
Yeah.
Because there's some hidden gems in them and they set the way for some of the other parody type movies.
Yeah, so if anybody out there is still listening at this point, I know we've kind of gone shitty Netflix review. It's a kind of insane segment, but if you've gotten this far, please watch that movie if you have Netflix. It's hilarious. hilarious, and you're going to love every second of it.
And speaking of movies that are going to be coming out, we talked about M. Night Shyamalan. We actually just watched a trailer the other day for this movie. It's called The Split, and it's basically this guy with multiple personality disorders, and he captures these girls, and you see the clip, he's like five different people in this movie.
Yeah.
And me and John are all about the scary movies, and you know, M. Night Shyamalan, he's had some hits and he's also had some misses, so I definitely think it's a
huge misses.
Yeah, huge misses, but also his hits are good, so it's like, true. So this movie could be really good. I think it's got the potential to be good. I mean, it's rated PG-13, so I don't know. But I'm gonna go see it, and hopefully, you know, if you're a fan of M. Night Shyamalan, you might go see that, because we definitely want to go see it.
Yeah, it's. I'm pretty sure the main character was James McAvoy, too, who's a pretty solid actor.
Like, is he the Split guy?
Yeah, he's the main crazy guy. So it says it's set for January 20th release. But on that note, sadly, we only got 20 seconds left in the show, so me and Paul are going to ramble and make this 20 seconds worth it.
Hey, you know, thanks for everyone for tuning in to John and Paul. Not the John and Paul show, John and Paul. I would like to also thank Michigan Prep the Pros for letting us do a
10 seconds.
letting us do our podcast here. Thanks everyone for listening, and catch us again next Thursday.
Hey, we love you. Hey, thanks. Oh.